the way I was treated was I was handicapped before. And everybody wanted to do for me. I didn't want them to do it. And now I've, you know, come full circle and I can do it all myself and I feel comfortable and confident again. And it's really, it's pretty cool.
Welcome to Curing with Sound, a podcast presented by the Focus Ultrasound Foundation. I'm your host, Allison Preston Smith. Most people don't think twice about the mundane aspects of their daily routines, pouring a cup of coffee in the morning, going for a run, writing a memo down at work, and commuting home in the evening. As simple as these tasks may seem, they can be a challenge for those diagnosed with Parkinson's-related tremor, like today's guest, Chuck Walker. Back in 2013, Chuck, an active adventure seeker who enjoyed running, hiking, and riding his motorcycle, noticed a change on the right side of his body. Soon his symptoms progressed, impacting his daily life. After years of struggle, Chuck received focus ultrasound treatment for Parkinson's-related tremor in 2022, and he received bilateral treatment on the left side of his body in 2023. The treatments have had a significant impact on his health, allowing him to resume the hobbies he once enjoyed. I'm joined by Chuck and his wife, Dr. Maureen Wellahan. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Thanks for inviting us here.
Chuck, before you were diagnosed with Parkinson's and Parkinson's-related tremor, you lived a very active life. What were some of the activities that you enjoyed doing?
Exercised a lot. Exercise was key to me. And I've always exercised. My entire life has been exercise since I got out of the military. I liked to bicycle, graduated to motorcycles after that.
Were there other activities that became difficult once the tremor started?
Absolutely. I had an air conditioning company, and I did a lot of presentations, both to the employees and to customers, clients. And I just didn't feel comfortable getting up in front of somebody with the tremor. As time went on, the tremor got worse, and because each time I would get up to speak, tremor, and I would have to hide my hand in my pocket. It would still shake in my pocket, and I just didn't feel comfortable. And I basically quit doing it altogether because of that. I used to love to run. I did at least 20 miles a week previously, and then coming back, I found that's my first diagnosis was a self-diagnosis of one foot was landing flat while I was running, so I couldn't figure out what that was. And come later on, we got diagnosed with Parkinson's.
Oh my goodness. Were there any other signs before the official diagnosis?
I saw the tremor, but I didn't really know the features that made it Parkinson's. The rigidity was the thing that I really didn't have a lot of information on. And he said it was the stiffness, the shoulder sits up. And I was like, you know what? I do notice that. And, you know, a few different things about his walk. And of course, then the slapping of the foot, you know, the way the foot hit the ground and the fact that his arm didn't swing naturally when he walked, that rigidity again.
And Maureen, you were noticing all of this happening. How long was it going on before you realized this is something that needed to be looked into and that Chuck should talk to a neurologist?
So I'm a gynecologist. I'm a physician. And when Chuck and I started dating, I noticed that we'd be at lunch and his hand would shake. And I'm like, was he nervous to be with me? Or does he need to have a cocktail? Like, what's going on with this tremor? And I brought it up and I said, you know, you have a shake. Maybe it's just benign essential tremor. I'm more familiar with that. But if you want to get that worked up a little bit more, I can send you to a neurologist. And that was sort of the cavalier conversation. I can remember where we were sitting and when we had that. And probably a day or two later, he said, I think I want to see somebody.
And Chuck, when you began seeing a neurologist, what was the first step in treating the tremor?
The first step was medication. I was not on carbidopa levodopa, which is the know-all drug for Parkinson's, for about 5 years. So we waited about 5 years. I contributed that to exercise. He said, as long as I keep exercising, we can hold off the drugs as long as we possibly can. But then the tremor started in my right and left hand both. And that's when I got serious about the carbidopa levodopa. We got on that and proceeded on from there.
But it was not without side effects. So, with the disease, as his symptoms progressed, his success on each of the medications, and we would research medications left and right. Let's try this. Let's try this. Sometimes mm-hmm. we would be asking his doctor, how about this? And then he'd allow it, but wasn't necessarily a fan. I mean, we were searching. And the meds just kept becoming less effective as the disease progressed, as we know happens with Parkinson's. Mm-hmm.
When did you learn about focused ultrasound?
Focused ultrasound, I was in a meeting of the Parkinson's Association. The surgeon that does deep brain stimulation actually presented, you know, that this is an up-and-coming idea of the focused ultrasound.
And I said, I know all about focused ultrasound. In fact, I have a key contact for that. And so we met and I said, you know, he heard about this for Parkinson's and I know about it for fibroids. And at the time, the studies were just being done for benign essential tremor. So she sort of gave me the lowdown on, I think the trials were just finishing up for benign essential tremor with the unilateral pallidotomy. Chuck said at that meeting, that's the one I want. Right. You know, this procedure is what I want. And I said, well, you don't have to have anything yet. You're still early. He's like, that's the one I'm going to have. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, you know, we'll see. So the contact stayed with Suzanne and I got more literature. Ended up sending a couple patients for the studies for, the early studies for Parkinson's on the unilateral pallidotomy. One of my patients who was, quite advanced in her disease and, you know, she was on a placebo controlled trial, right? So she called me and said, it didn't work. And I said, oh, bummer. We were really hopeful. And then she reached out to me about 3 months later and said, I was the placebo. It didn't work because I was the placebo. And she said, now I get to have the treatment. I think I should have it. And I said, I think you should have it. They wouldn't offer it to you if it wasn't working. And so she had it. And she's another success story. She's a couple years out now. No tremor. When she comes to my office, she's just so stable, nothing. It's just fascinating. So obviously, thus our enthusiasm preceding Chuck's experience.
Was there anything that drew you to focused ultrasound in particular?
Well, I started off with deep brain stimulation. I never liked that as an alternative to the medications. So I went on, and I kept trying to find something that wasn't invasive, basically surgery. They had to open up your brain, they had to drill holes in you, run the wires down the back of your neck to a power pack in your chest. I mean, as active as I was, that didn't seem like a possibility I could live with. So I kept bringing it up to my neurologist. I had changed neurologists. The original neurologist that diagnosed me had retired. He moved to another county, so I couldn't use him anymore. So I switched to another neurologist who was very big in the deep brain stimulation. In fact, him and Dr. Zucker did probably 4 or 5 years of the deep brain stimulation. And I just said, I just don't feel comfortable with that. I'm not a candidate for that. But I heard about this focused ultrasound. So I've been prodding him from day one when I first heard about it of getting me on a trial. And he said, you're a candidate for a trial. So,
well, it was interesting. Behind the scenes, evidently, I found out from my focused ultrasound contact, I'm like, look, this is who his neurologist is. And she said, I just cannot get in the door to him. And I said, I'll get you in the door to him. We are educated people and we want to know more about this. And we at least want him to have an open mind. And in a very short period of time, you know, 6 months, I want to say, the follow-up was he's open to the discussion and he's going to start a trial with us. And I think that was really the benign essential tremor trial at the time. But at this point now, and, you know, obviously our concern was that their reluctance was that we're cutting into their surgical deal. And I appreciate that. I'm a physician and a surgeon, but you've got to do what's best for the patient. And your patient is clearly telling you, I'm never going to do that other option. I'll do without. But I'm open to hearing about this option that seems less invasive to me. And with that, you know, the story that now, you know, they have tons of experience with the trial because they're obviously one of the leaders in this area for sure. And so just getting people's minds open to saying, this is an alternative that at least you should hear about.
Can you walk listeners through what it's like to participate in a clinical trial? What do the first steps look like?
First steps are, of course, the application, getting involved, and knowing what you're up against. And then we had a lot of testing involved when you're on a trial, because they want to test a lot of different areas to make sure that after the procedure, those areas are still intact.
Such as?
Such as
speech.
Speech therapy.
Memory.
Memory.
Was your vision or hearing?
Voice.
Yeah.
Hearing. Had MRIs. Had CT scans. So there was a lot involved in getting ready for the trial itself. And you had to, and a psychologist too. And we had to go through and pass all those tests to get into the trial, of course. Then we proceeded on into the trial. The surgery itself was quite interesting. It was done as an outpatient in Delray Medical Center. And I walked in, and the first thing they wanted to do, well, the first thing they said is, we don't have to shave your head because your head's already shaved. So. Because they put a halo on you first thing when you walk in. So the first thing I did was they started prepping me for the halo, which is a metal band that goes around your head that gets put in basically your skull, has to be locked in place all the way through your skin to your skull. It's vitally important because, needless to say, you can't move while you're getting the focused ultrasound.
Right. It's a stabilizing device. So if anyone's ever had an MRI of the head, which I have, it's the similar helmet type device. This one was a little bit more dramatic because the procedure was longer. But the idea was, it was just making sure your head didn't move while they were making this intricate position.
And you go into the MRI, you put into the MRI, the halo is locked in place, and you physically cannot move your head. No matter how you try, you cannot move your head, which is a good thing. And then in and out, they did some MRI imaging and came back and about four or five times before they felt comfortable enough of doing the first test. And it took five tries on the right side and three tries on the left side to get satisfactory results. The results were immediate. I mean, when they pulled you out, and he was checking for the rigidity. He didn't really look too much for the tremor. He was looking for the rigidity in the left and right side. He had a comparison point of, you know, when we started, of course, and then when we ended. And it was quite interesting.
So I want to go back to, he got you from start to finish on the procedure, but I was a little reluctant because what patients don't know is there's phase two trials and phase three trials. So most of what patients are invited for are phase three trials. It means we're doing many, many people. We've already, you know, deemed this to be safe and effective. And now we're going to just do it in the masses to make sure we get the same results as we got in the small population. Not in this case. This was the small population. So I think there were only 50 people worldwide that were being tried on this newer technique, which was a bilateral procedure. They had great success with a unilateral procedure, but one side. Now they're doing both sides, and they're going to change the location just a little bit. And so the hairs on my back went up as the physician going, wait a minute, this is a completely different story here. Phase two says there may be some problems. And if it happens to you, I'm sorry to tell you that, but that's what you're volunteering for. So I went in sort of as an anti to Dr. Zucker's office. And I had a list of questions, man. I was just hammering him just right after the other. Challenging him on all the reasons why Chuck might not be a good candidate for this surgery. And surprisingly, I got calmer and calmer as the consult went on, because he was expanding on things that really concerned me as a physician and stuff that I could research had happened. My comment was, I'll take my husband's tremor. I want his brain to be the same. I want my husband to be him. I'll put up with a tremor for that. And so he gave me a lot of reassurance. And Chuck was still sitting there saying, I'm going to have this procedure. And And I would say, do you understand what I'm saying? That this risk is, risk of stroke or whatever. And he would say, I understand. And we got through the whole consult. Well, at that point, I said, this is his life and this is his battle. And I'm going to support him in whatever he chooses. But going in on that day that he was excited, I was nervous. I was the nervous spouse sitting in the waiting room, pacing, if you will. I was doing charts, but still, I was pacing in my head, worrying. So there is a great deal of nervousness for the significant other in the relationship of the Parkinson's patient, because after all, you want your person better, but you don't want them to have a consequence that's worse than what you started with. And so I can say I have flipped my apprehension into advocacy and say, you know, I'm amazed and excited and, you know, super pleased, not only for what he experiences as his success, but also as the spouse of the person with Parkinson's to say, listen, I had a lot of grief and worry. And wow, we speak about it all the time. This is something many people can consider with good conscience.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, Maureen. We normally only focus on the worries and the anxieties of the patient, and it's very difficult for the spouse or caretaker or partner as well. And it can be just as anxiety inducing. How was the recovery process?
Recovery was fine. Came home the same day. Of course, it was outpatient, like I keep saying. And they said limited exercise or nothing for 3 days. So I did that reluctantly, but I did it because I noticed that my tremors were gone and I wanted to try them out.
And you remember that first day that you did the walk?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We were walking the first day that I could walk again and exercise. We were walking together and she says, I noticed your arm swings back.
Shocking.
Shocking. My right hand never swung.
So when we would walk normally, when we would go out for our walks to the boat ramp, I would notice that arm not moving before treatment. And I would grab it and go, come on, you got to like move this arm. You got to keep it going. And he would just be aggravated that I was being silly like that and very dramatic. And the first on day three, whatever the day was, we were allowed to exercise. I said, well, let's just start with a walk down to the boat ramp, do our regular. And I was walking sort of behind him. I was watching his gait. I was watching symmetry. I was all over it. And the arm was swinging naturally. And the shoulder, the rigid shoulder, was now down in a more neutral position. And I was like, look, your arm is moving. And, he was like, he didn't notice. He was like, oh, yeah, how about that? And to me, that was like my aha moment. Like, wow, this is pretty cool.
Maureen, how were you feeling about the recovery? Did you feel like you could finally breathe a sigh of relief?
Obviously, I was quite relieved that we had such success, and he was just so happy about no tremor. He kept showing me no tremor.
I show everybody.
Yeah, he's always doing the hand. I'm good.
So does that mean you're back to hiking, running, and riding on your motorcycle?
The only thing we gave up was the motorcycle.
Sold the motorcycle, so no motorcycle. But we're boaters, so we go out on the boat.
All right, we can do both. So
yeah, but running. Was something that came better. You know, I would go in there and start seeing him instead of walking on the treadmill, running on the treadmill. I was like, look at that. So, yep. Hiking is always, you always really try to commit to your hiking. So, yep. Lots. He's active. You can't hold him down.
No.
What did it feel like to be able to do those activities again?
Feels amazing. One of the little things that I didn't notice before that I notice now is, I love to fish. So she talked about boating, take our boat out, but I was having a hard time tying my knots and in the fishing hooks and rigging the gear and getting everything ready for fishing. I was having a hard time doing that. And after the procedure, I could do all of that again. I could tie my knots again. I could rig all the gear, put a line on the fishing poles, all those things that I found so difficult before that I had to find a way around the normal way of doing it. Just because of the tremor.
And I think also I would tell you, I think he got his dignity back in our business group or his business group that he's part of. To hear his friends who he admires and respects that are other business owners come up and go, that is fascinating. First, they would just tell me to myself and go, wow, Chuck looks good, or man, that's really amazing. And then they would say, we have a friend we think you should talk to who has, he knows somebody with Parkinson's. Can we give them your phone number? And so just that word of mouth and having that conversation with your peers, but just getting, feeling like you were equivalent with your peer in a business group and not feeling like you got to sit in the back and put your hand in your pocket.
Right. And I feel that everybody's treating me a little differently. So like you say, I got my dignity back again, but the way I was treated was I was handicapped before. Everybody wanted to do for me. I didn't want them to do it. And now I've, you know, come full circle and I can do it all myself and I feel comfortable and confident again. And it's really
pretty cool.
It's pretty cool.
Well, that's so great to hear. And what would you say to other people who are thinking about participating in a clinical trial, either for Parkinson's related tremor or a different condition?
Oh, don't hesitate. Look into it, make yourself comfortable with it, but this is a life changing. It really is. I want to thank the Focus Ultrasound Association for everything they've done.
There's no way we can advance in medicine without having clinical trials. We have laws that are, you know, require us to follow protocols to make sure people are safe. And so patients must appreciate that there's a process and a cost. I have no idea what the cost is of having a bilateral palatothalamic tract ablation, but I'm going to tell you, based on the amount of time he was in the space and under MRI guidance and the number of technicians and docs, that this was not an inexpensive procedure that we received for dedicating our trust and life. In return, we got a procedure that was priceless to us. And so when given the opportunity to participate in a clinical trial, they're not going to let you in unless you're a candidate for whatever trial it is. They're going to invite everyone. They're going to include and exclude based on the criteria. They're not going to let people who want to get in if they're not good candidates and vice versa. And this is how we make progress. And who would have known that 15 years ago, when I was sitting in a meeting with Susie LeBlanc, listening about how this ultrasound beam guided through an MRI was going to fire through a woman's belly and hit the fibroid and shrink it without me doing a hysterectomy, and that would turn into not just how it works in the brain, but all of the steps in between, and so many more. So that piece. And then we thank the people that donate the money to these organizations to allow these treatments to happen. So behind these clinical trials are funders that believe in the value and they contribute money and donate money for the success of and the progress with medicine. And so we certainly thank those people who also allow these kind of things to happen. So we know that there's a lot of magic that happens behind the scenes that people don't appreciate. As a healthcare provider, I appreciate that it's necessary. And obviously, it was priceless for Chuck.
Thank you both so much. It's been so great talking to you. And Chuck, thank you for sharing your experience as a patient. And Maureen, thank you for sharing your experience as a spouse, being by Chuck's side every step of the way.
Absolutely.
We'll be happy to give anybody information that wants to reach out to us.
This episode of Curing with Sound has been presented by the Focused Ultrasound Foundation. If you would like to learn more about Focused Ultrasound or the Foundation, visit our website at fussfoundation.org. You can also sign up for our newsletter and follow us on social media.